to another episode of the Game Diary, but postscript version of it. I'm Miss Arvy.
Postscript, that's right. I'm Michelle Morrow, and we've got an awesome follow-up mini-sode for you guys today with the one and only DJ Wheat.
Hey.
Hi, we're so happy to have you. If you guys missed our diary entry on DJ Wheat, you can find it in the description below. But for now, welcome to the Game Diaries postscript. We were so excited to have you.
Thanks for having me. I enjoyed the episode. It was a surprise. So thank you. I was honored, and I think you guys are doing just some great work over there. Even before I was saying I haven't watched the Ocelot episode yet, but I'm excited to dive into that one. And it's really cool to see all of the individuals that you've got telling their story. So thank you. As someone who you've told the story, I know that they all appreciate it. So thank you so much.
It's always so nerve-wracking to do. So we are very happy to hear that you were pleased with it.
Yeah, I know that when people talk about me, every little detail, I'm always like, oh, it wasn't exactly that, but it's okay, you know? So I know that's how people are going to feel. So
That's how stories evolve over time anyway, right? I mean, you know, it's fine.
That's true. That's why it's a diary entry, right? It's our way of telling that story. Marcus, as we said in your episode, you are so inspiring, and your path in esports and just overall in gaming has been one for, we're going to remember it for a lifetime and centuries. I'm sure you've changed gaming as we know it. You're one of first esports broadcaster, kind of created the genre. What it is for you, what is it like for you today to be considered one of the greatest? I think I can't say it.
Pioneer.
I can't say it any other way.
Yeah. It's a little surreal, to be honest. I can't say that I was ever a pioneer in anything, and I certainly wasn't trying to be a pioneer when I first started. I think it was, back then it was just purely passion, right? It was, wow, this is a way to, in my case, it was Quake, really, support this game that I love and this competitive community that I love. And I think, I sort of fell into that weird trap where it's like, oh, wow, you can do this and I could commentate it. And now let me figure out some like cool technology that goes with it. And let me add to that. And then eventually that led to video. So, I mean, it's just almost kind of, it's a bit wild to me because it wasn't necessarily what I set out to do. I just wanted to have fun. I wanted more people to experience Quake because I loved it so much. And it was like the best trip that I could have possibly taken, stumbled a little bit. It's like, oh, wow, look at this amazing world that, that I've discovered. So it is quite an honor to feel like I got a chance to be one of the individuals early on that took a brick and kind of placed it down in the road for others to follow. And I think that's what's most exciting to me, is like as a pioneer, there's sort of, I think, two ways to look at it. There is this sort of sentiment of like, damn it, I missed out because it's better now than it was then, right? Like people get paid now and we were not getting paid. We were paying other people. But at the same token, it feels incredible. And there's no other greater feeling than to sit back and say, no, I got to help build that road. And, it's my passion now to see others succeed in this area. And to just know that I had even the smallest part in that is, what I will always think of fondly when I think about, those times. So it's it feels amazing.
It's surreal, right? And it's really inspiring for sure. But let's go back to the beginning. Let's go back to those like early days of the internet and pre-internet, because I think you were kind of an early adopter. I was on like AOL, and I think you and I are kind of similar in age. And I wasn't doing stuff.
Well, you're
like,
23, right?
Yeah, so yeah, we're both 23. Close. God, that's so wild. Yeah. So funny. but I wasn't, on the bulletin board services and whatnot. For the kids out there, Can you describe what that was like at that time period, being on the internet and the pre-internet?
Yeah, it is one of my favorite times, right? Like, a computer is neat, but a computer with connectivity was like mind blowing, right? So, the discovery of being able to dial another computer system and like interact, even though it was asynchronous, it wasn't something that you were doing at the same time, right? Like, we weren't on the BBS at the same time, but there was like a scoreboard. So like, one of the games that I loved to play was like Baron Realms Elite and Trade Wars 2020. And these are both games that had scoreboards. And the beauty of them is they usually reset after a couple months. So there's always this mad dash to try to stay on top of the scoreboards. And it's not much different than the arcade score chasing, right? That happened in sort of the early 70s or the late 70s into the early 80s. But I think it was just truly the fact that I would get off, I would maybe write my messages, and then another human would come on and sort of occupy that space, and then they would interact. And then when I came back to it, it changed. So it was truly that moment for me where it just felt like the world just got so much bigger. And at the time, BBSs were still your local area code, right? Like, I could not call long distance. I would get in so much trouble. But it was like all of the BBSs in Omaha and in Council Bluffs where I was from. And then occasionally these groups would get together. And that was kind of my first, foray into LAN parties is even before the PC gaming started to pick up, whereas like get together with people who have similar interests. You're so-and-so Death Slayer 41. It's nice to meet you. I'm DJ Weed or Rush or Mr. Orange or whatever I was going back by then.
Rush. Was that like because of the band?
No, it was the name of my Shadowrun character, actually.
Oh, and, yes.
It was that first moment. So you can imagine that kind of like feeling like you've broken into this new world, but then the internet coming and then the world getting that much bigger. But I spent years on BBSs, maybe 4 years. I ran my own BBSs. It's where I learned, like, that was my motivation for learning to code, because, I wanted to be able to code my own doors and utilities and whatnot. Don't do much coding anymore. But it was a big motivator for me. And I early adopter. Yeah, I'll gladly take that moniker. It was just that step that we're almost there to the internet, and that was necessary in order for, the internet to become a reality.
I'm so happy we have you on. You're such a great storyteller. You and Michelle are so good. I'm just sitting here and I'm like enjoying the stories. So you were always an early adopter, but, I was grounded a lot when I was a kid for playing games, not because I played games, but because I played them late, woke up my parents. It was more about what happened around it.
Inconvenience.
Yeah, exactly. But you still mentioned how important your parents were for introducing you to gaming technology and just technology overall. I want to know. Go ahead. I'll ask my question.
I was
going to
say it's true. It is true. I mean, it's funny because I got in trouble a lot for playing video games, but it's their fault. They were the one that handed that Atari 2600 to me. So it's like, I don't know how you can be mad at me when you put this joystick in my hand when I was 3 years old. Yeah.
So they were mom and dad.
So I want to know, your son is getting older. I think, if I'm not mistaken, he's like 16 now.
15, yeah. 15, he'll be 16 in 2021. Close.
Okay. Yeah. As a gamer dad, how did you approach gaming with your son? Did you do a little bit what your parents did, or was there something different?
Yeah. I feel like I can write a whole book of like gaming parenting. Because the way that, the way that I approached it was this, is that it was going to be natural that that Mini Wheat, my son James, was going to be around a lot of games, right? I mean, that was kind of the height of when the gaming and streaming explosion was really happening. And the one thing that I said early on is that I won't ever force a game on, you know, my son. Because, you know, people always assume, oh, he's going to be a Quake pro. Oh, he's going to be a StarCraft pro. And it's like, if he wants to be, you know, I think that it is counterproductive to sit down and say, you've got to play StarCraft for 8 hours a day because that's what I'm known for, right? So while I certainly would say, would you like to sit down and play some StarCraft and I can teach you a little bit? You know, yeah, let's do that. But it was up to him to determine what he liked, what he wanted to play. So early on, there was a lot of Minecraft, Roblox, huge into Roblox, which I think is the largest game that, you know, many people have not heard of.
Yeah.
And you know, eventually that led to consoles. Eventually that led to arcade. Eventually that led to pinball. And he's pretty eclectic when it comes to gaming. He tends to lean more towards strategy-based games, which I do think is pretty interesting, but he's quite a good FPS player. Another pro tip is that when he was very young, this is like my favorite tip. I give it to every new gaming parent. If you want your son or daughter to have amazing control with a mouse and keyboard, what you do is you put them on a super, super, super high sensitivity to start. So they'll be like 2 years old or 3 years old. There's a lot of like really cool, like flash based games that are perfect for that age. And you start them out with a very, very high sensitivity. So what it forces them to do is learn immaculate control, because the slightest touch of their mouse is like, right? So then over time you start to decrease it and decrease it and decrease it a little bit. And I'm telling you, this is what produces the next generation of esports stars. Like, I'm
so
constantly
smart.
Blown away. Yeah.
That's like dad made me learn how to drive on a stick shift. You know, it's a kind of a similar concept in that. That is fascinating. Yeah.
I'm taking notes. Maybe one day
I do have to say, though, we did have our first game grounding happen not too long ago. Yes.
What was it for?
And, can you dish?
Well, he did the exact same thing that I did when I was 13 or 14 years old. And that is that I would stay up until 3 or 4 in the morning playing games. The difference was I knew how to be very quiet.
Yeah.
And James is like, it's 4 in the morning and we just hear him like giggling and laughing uncontrollably. And Jen and I are just looking at each other like, is he serious right now? And then, you know, it's the stomp downstairs and Mini Wheat, do you know what time it is? And he's like, yeah, I'm sorry, I'm going to bed. He turns off the computer, and the next day he knew he was in trouble. He lost, you know, his privileges for a few days. And, you know, we couldn't help but laugh at it because
it's hilarious.
It's exactly what we did too when we were younger.
Yeah.
So
we totally busted my 10-year-old nephew on World of Warcraft like 4 nights ago. It was about 2:30 in the morning. My husband and I were running Torghast like before the reset, and we just see our my brother-in-law, his character pop on, and we're like,
interesting.
What are you doing online right now, Will? And he didn't answer. And we're like, oh, interesting. And then we were like, awesome. Do we bust him? Like, do we rat on him to his dad? Or do we like let him get away with it? We let him get away with it. But, you know, it was cute that he was like sneaking away. You know? Yeah. We had to respect it, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's funny, Michelle, because like that's the other thing is that I know all the tricks, son. Yeah, you know, I know
true.
All the tricks, so you're not getting away with anything because I've tried them all. I know them all. I'm a gamer myself. So like, I know that you can close that DS and you can open it right back up and be right where you left off. So you can't be playing your DS and say, no, let me find a safe spot because I'll call you on your BS. So yeah.
That's amazing. Well, the next question we have for you has a little bit more to do with technique. Something that we talked about in the podcast was Ms. Harvey brought up the fact that you did debate. And to the surprise of everyone, I didn't do debate growing up. I did improv. And it's an interesting thing when we start talking about it in the podcast, because I was like, a lot of my friends in esports and gaming actually did debate. Like Anna did debate. And debate kind of has seeped more in this like no but. And improv is sort of in this yes and. For all of the aspiring broadcasters out there listening who want to host or commentate, and they all are slightly different, of course, in what we do. But what do you really, how would you better describe those two forms of communication? And which ones do you think those would be best for people to kind of go and learn or to take class-wise to broadcast?
I love that question. So the way it kind of played out for me is that I did do both. I did speech and then I did debate. And then, you know, in my high school, you kind of got to this fork in the road and you're like, which way do you want to go? And for me at the time, I was definitely the type of individual that's like, well, I want to argue with people, of course. And then I want to, you know, I want to come up with arguments that then they can't defeat. Like, that's great. But I really did love, you know, what speech was. So interestingly enough is that improv was still a big part of what, you know, what I was involved in high school, because, you know, we would sort of do whose line is it anyway style things amongst friends, right? That's like fun. That was really fun for us to do. So I think you kind of nail it, that there is a, you know, yes, and a yes, but, or a no, but, between the two. I believe that both are very good at helping you think on your feet, which for any kind of anyone in this industry, gaming, or frankly, any sort of entertainment industry, I think it's a amazing skill to have. What I do think you get a lot out of debate is memory recall, right? Where it is like, oh yeah, actually someone tried to use this against me back in, you know, last year, and they used this piece of evidence and the judge didn't like it, so I'm going to go this way. And interestingly enough, like, I never would have expected that that was something that I was pulling from debate. But given the nature of both policy, which is all evidence-based, and then L. Lincoln Douglas, which is a little bit more philosophical-based, each sort of, I think, is one of the reasons why I was able to pull away, because, you know, even nowadays, esports casters don't necessarily have feeds that are just sending them stats. So, you know, back in the days, the early 2000s, it was all coming from memory, you know, and sometimes you were wrong, but you had to say like, yeah, actually, you know, NI3 faced 04 at this exact same map and Cooler now is in the same situation. And so I think like that was a big takeaway that I saw, maybe not realizing it at first, but coming, you know, many, many years later, you sort of realize, oh, that's why it was so important in high school and why I kept up with it. But I would absolutely encourage, you know, and I'm going to encourage my own son to do it, that I think there's so many great skills that you can learn from speech and debate. And speech is even more amazing, right? Because you have like impromptu speaking and you have like structured speaking and you have, you know, you could do UN, right? There are so many different ways that you could go. But I think it's such a great utility and practice for anyone that wants to get into public speaking or entertainment speaking, or in this day and age, content creation. I think it was kind of my early way of doing content creation when there wasn't actually content creation, if that makes sense.
No, absolutely. It does. Really, and I think there's probably, like, just listening to you talk about it is fascinating. I think that there's almost like a blend between the two that's really helpful with, like, the number one thing when people ask me what they should do, I'm like, take an improv class. Because it helps you really listen to the person that you're either interviewing or working with. And building that rapport between the people you work with is so vital so that you can have those debates and you can have those disagreements without, like, you know, setting somebody off on camera or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know anyone that took debate here in Quebec, in Canada, because it's not really a thing. So every time I see that in movies or I hear about other people talking about, like, I did debate in high school, I'm always like listening like this, like, oh, it must have been so fun, you know? Like, it's so awesome to hear about. I love it. I love it.
I just had never thought about it before or considered it until she told me you did debate. And I was like, that's really interesting because so many people I know took it.
Yeah. Many great people I know took it too. And I guess that's why we're all in the same job field now. Okay. I want to come back to right when you started being a caster, right after being a pro in Quake, let's just say that, whatever pro was 20 years ago.
Right.
I used to listen to TSN. Okay. So I feel that I'm extremely old as well when it comes to these kind of things, because I listened to TSM. I used to write that IP into Winamp and like tune in to the radio where we were like 30 people watching across the world, mm-hmm. you know, some broadcasts. But I want to know, what do you remember from those days? And is there some kind of moment from TSN or Inside the Game, like from that era that you you remember that was really cool?
You know, I remember a lot of it. I mean, there was just something phenomenal about, you know, seeing, I talked a little bit about the BBSs, right? I talked about this world that I kind of broke into, and then the internet, right, was making this world so much bigger. And really up to that point, how are we conversing, right? Like instant messengers, maybe on forums, but there was still kind of like, you know, instant messengers were interactive, but forums, you'd type your post, you'd keyboard warrior, and then you'd come back 2 hours later and you'd see how many people keyboard warriored me back.
Right.
But it was the moment that you were able to speak words into a microphone and then see words back on the screen that said, ha ha, that was so funny, we... Or, you know, yes, that was indeed a great shot. It was that moment. It was truly, for me, the birth of interactivity, right? The thing that now drives Twitch.
That's all the time.
It is the reason why the Twitch viewership is, you know, as high as it is, and how some of these creators are, because it's built off of that. It is a instant response. It is a two-way street. And it was really the first time that I ever got to experience what that two-way street could be like. And it would be like driving a sports car through a back alley and be like, well, this is a cool car, but I can't go very fast in this back alley. And then suddenly you're on a two-way, you know, two-lane highway, and you're like, I can go as fast as I want. And it was mind-blowing. And that's really the thing that I take away, right? The other thing I would take away is I got the chance to work with so many incredible people who are still today, you know, have a part in esports. Whether it is behind the microphone or behind the camera or in front of the camera, or individuals that were, you know, back then, you know, running teams or trying to build their own esports organizations. I mean, instant, you know, names that come to mind is like Craig Levine and Tosspot and, you know, Trillian, who doesn't necessarily do anything anymore, but her husband, Doug Suttles, who was one of our first sponsors through Speakeasy, went on to create speednet.test or speedtest.net.
Wow.
And, you know, is now, right? Like, there's so many little crazy threads where I look back now and, you know, Tosspot he works for WME, right? It works for one of the like premier agencies when it comes to gaming. Yeah. It is Tasteless, who is right. A StarCraft commentator over in Korea. And so it's kind of weird because I just feel like I grew up with all these people and got a chance to work with them. In some cases, mentor them, in some cases, you know, innovate and help build that road. And that's really exciting to me too, is to, you know, Carmack, right? One of my favorites. We used to sit back in IRC and dream about like, one day this is going to be so big, Carmack. And he's like, yes, it's going to be huge. And no one believes us now, but just we'll say told you so in the future.
Yes.
And, you know, it was those moments to be able to say, you know, people think we're crazy now, but what we're doing is awesome. And we're just going to keep doing it because we love it. And those are the moments that I really take away that are the fondest to me.
If you were in gaming and esports 20 years ago, 15 years ago, and you're still around, you know that you worked and weren't paid for over half of your time working in esports, like over a decade probably, and you did it out of passion while trying to have a second job on the side. So those are the ones you have to respect, because if they're still around, they starved at some point to do whatever they like.
We ate a lot of ramen, yes.
Yep, yeah. Peanut butter sandwiches for me.
Yep.
That's the thing when you're pioneering a new field and you have all these challenges and you're not getting paid and you're working super hard and you have multiple jobs. And, you know, often people have labeled you the first commentator. And I know that you've gone on record to sort of say, you know, there's a lot of different examples of people doing that like really early on, and that you feel sort of uncomfortable taking that like full credit. And we even learned actually in our first diary entry for Burger Becky, we talked about the Atari 2600 Space Invaders tournament. Mm-hmm. That they had commentators that were on air. I've never seen that footage. I've looked for it. I haven't seen it, but I would love to see what that what that looked like. Because what she said in the interview was that, like, it's not like they had like strategy stuff that they were talking about. The commentators didn't know really what they were doing, and they were kind of hired as a marketing ploy. You know, I'm not really sure if the footage even exists. Who were some more of the people that really kind of inspired you around that time? Like, obviously, you've mentioned a few of them, but was there anybody that you hadn't met that sort of fueled you at that time?
You know, not at the very beginning. You know, I would say I looked up to many AM radio hosts, many commentators that were in the sports world, because you know, they taught me that being a John Madden is a thing. Being a John Motson is a thing, right? That you can have a recognizable style and a methodology to your delivery, and that, you know, people would enjoy that, or maybe sometimes hate it. I don't know. It depends. So I think a lot of my early inspirations were not necessarily casters, like in the esports sense, but more from like the sports and the radio world. I would say that my first sort of, my first true in industry inspiration was, believe it or not, Total Biscuit. Yeah, because so there's like a little, like there's a story that a lot of people don't actually know. And that is that, when Radio ITG Inside the Game was existing, like, we were even thinking about, you know, esports is cool, but we also love other types of gaming. And we had like Epileptic Gaming as a show, and we had a Counter-Strike show. But at the time, World of Warcraft was growing, right? And it was becoming a thing. And we were saying, gosh, we should be making some content around, you know, World of Warcraft. And I ended up starting a show called Weapon of Choice that was all WoW-based. And so in this whole process, we discovered, hey, there's a station out there. It's called WoW Radio. And they kind of do what we do, except all in World of Warcraft. And maybe there's a world where we can join together and we can, you know, make a larger network that people, or it could be beneficial that we get WoW players into esports and esports players into WoW. And so for a very long time, there was a lot of discussion with WoW Radio. Now, at the time, Total Biscuit, John didn't actually work for them yet. But unfortunately, the deal ended up falling through. And the person who kind of was spearheading it over on their side kind of, you know, it was early internet, right? Like, people flaked out occasionally. Yeah. And so this individual flaked out. A few of their staff actually came over and joined ITG. But John, who had one show, it was called Blue Please. And John, like, he was just like, I'm just going to keep doing my own thing. Like, you know, not really worrying about the WoW Radio part of it. But Blue Please in and of itself was one of the early WoW shows that I remember going, this guy is fucking amazing.
Yeah.
You know, wow. Like, I really love this guy, right? And I remember feeling regret that we didn't get a chance to combine and so I could work with him. Yeah. And we obviously did much later and you know, became friends with Jenna. But he was probably one of my first, and that obviously that's not a caster. He was yeah. just a, he was doing a talk show, but he was so great at it, right? And mm-hmm. so, just like all of the other AM radio talent that I thought was great, I was like, this person talks about games, the way that I want to talk about games. And I was doing Epileptic Gaming at the same time. And I think that there's actually a lot of inspiration that we pulled from Blue Please. And, you know, so I would say that, you know, TB was probably my first sort of, you know, industry heartthrob, like that guy inspires me. And, you know, and shit, at that point, like TB ended up making, you know, 5 shows for WoW Radio that were all really, really good.
Yeah.
So I would have to give that to John.
Oh, so sweet. Me too.
Making me emotional.
It just made me realize we have to put him on our list early in 2021 of story.
Yeah,
he's such a great, great yeah. one. To be going from one kind of sad joy news, interesting moment to another kind of hard one, I want to jump and talk about CGS. You know, we covered it on the episode. I pointed mm-hmm. my version of it because obviously there's not a lot of documentation and opinion pieces about CGS because it happens
right.
so early in esports. But I'm super bitter about the experience because as a viewer and as a Counter-Strike fan, it was quite
right.
a nail in the coffin back then for what CS represented. I want to know from your point of view, from behind the scene, I feel that learning about the CGS experience kind of, we realize everything that happened years after. Like while it was happening, it wasn't as crazy of a moment than like 5-10 years looking back.
Right, right. Yeah, so I mean, CGS in a nutshell is both my light side and dark side, yeah. right? Dark side for many of the reasons that you just brought up. You know, it was the first experience of like, oh, so this is what happened when money comes into esports
yeah.
and, you know, that money turns into control. And then I learned a lot about, oh, so this is how you play the game of politics within the entertainment industry and, you know, figuring out like that's the person that I need to be in their ear. And I, you know, if I am going to try to make a change, they are the one who is going to be a vehicle for that. So there was a lot of that happened. And, you know, I remember, you know, a shout out Craig Levine again, too, because at the time, you know, him and Laurent and you know, they were every day just like, please just listen to us. Like, don't cut this game off at its knees. This isn't what it needs. And I will give some credit where credit is due in that Mike Burks really did everything that he could to try to maintain the competitive integrity of the game. The problem is that the television format was brutal. It did not lend itself to the game of CS. And mm-hmm. so, you know, it was bittersweet because on one hand, you're like, wow, look at all this exposure that we can get. On the other hand, we weren't quite to the point where we could say, we don't need TV. We don't need, we can have 3-hour matches if we want. That's the way it should
yeah.
be. So there are a lot of sort of dark moments as it relates to CGS. On the flip side, I got to do over 300 live shows.
That's amazing.
And let me tell you,
wow,
that is a lot of experience in 2.5 years. So to me, I was like, I'm going through a boot camp right now. I am going through the most intense boot camp that I have ever gone through.
And
I have got not one producer, but two producers in my ear. I've got, you know, doing wardrobe. I've got all of this stuff that's, I've got people running up to me with papers, like, that's like, we're changing all this and get all this done, you know? And that was not only hard, but incredibly beneficial for me as a talent, right? It stretched so many muscles that would have taken me years to stretch and practice and exercise with over a very, very small amount of time. And I'm very thankful for being able to get that opportunity, even if it did come with some heartache, when it did come with some trials and tribulations. You know, it also, when CGS closed, that was like a devastating time because the economy was real bad and I could not find another job in the gaming space. And it, there was a lot of feeling of like having to just go back with my tail between my legs and sort of figure out what would be next. It was even more crazy to say, I've got all this television experience now and I have no idea what
Where
to do with
it,
right? So thankfully streaming was right around the corner, but I look back at CGS and it just depends. It's like a window that depending how I look at it, look through it, it's either hard to see through and the tint's not there, or there's like a beautiful spectrum rainbow that I'm very fond of and I like, right? So it just really comes down to, I think as more and more time gets away from it, you know, Counter-Strike is doing, you know, obviously pretty great right now considering its age and how long it's been around and the industry that is around it. So thankfully we're not in a world where like, yes, it killed Counter-Strike dead and it no longer exists. But I think the further I get away from CGS, the more I look back on it and just say it was an encyclopedia of learning experiences. It was all of the things and all the mistakes that anyone could have made. And hopefully I will take all of that and make sure that others don't make that mistake in the future.
Well, and those failures that, you know, anything that is entering a space for the first time is going to have those missteps, right? Like, and that event in particular really laid the groundwork for everything else that has been on television since, like from E-League to actually BlizzCon, because BlizzCon was on the audience network of DirecTV. And one of the guys that did CGS was the BlizzCon guy. He actually walked into it was my first year at BlizzCon, and he walked in and he was like kind of beating his chest, being like, I'm the guy who put esports on TV for the first time. And like, he made it like a really, he made it like a thing. Like we all had to listen. He told us all about it to regale us with it. But I mean, honestly, if he hadn't have done that, he may not have even had an interest to do BlizzCon, which was on DirecTV for a decade, you know? So I owe you a thank you for that. But then, of course, you know, Twitch happened after that, or you happened to Twitch, you know? And there's a billion questions that I have about Twitch in general, but I will spare you all of that for this podcast. And mostly, I think I just want to know what it feels like for you to know that, you know, you helped usher in the partnership program, which now allows people from all over the globe to make money playing video games, which was sort of, you know, what you were striving for as a young gamer, trying to figure out how do I do this and make this a career. And not only did you make it a career for yourself, but you made it a career for like millions of kids. And I'm not sure how many, I shouldn't say kids because lots of people do it, but how many, like everyone's kids to me.
Kids of all ages.
Kids of all ages. How many Twitch partners exist today? And what is it like for you to literally pioneer a new form of employment?
Yeah, well, I mean, there are, you know, we've got a partners, but we've also got affiliates. So the way that I like to say it is that we've got hundreds of thousands of people who are making money streaming, right? Whether they are a partner or they are affiliate, that's what's also important to me, right? Like I went through the YouTube era too, where it's like, okay, I've got to get up to this level in order to be able to inch out, you know, a couple dollars of ad revenue. And I think it's pretty incredible that even someone who has a small community or an incredibly large community still has the same opportunities as others, right? Can monetize and can can make money doing what they love or just being with their community or building that community. To me, it is another one of those kind of amazing moments that maybe won't even sink in, you know, for many more years to come, because I still feel like it is a budding and growing industry and I see innovation in it every day. And I've now celebrated I'm essentially on year 10 now of working at Twitch. And I still feel like for the last 9 years, I have just seen, you know, innovation every week, something new, something amazing, something that's blowing my mind, something that's like changing the way that I'm thinking about it. But I do take a lot of pride in, you know, being all the way back in like 2006 and really diving into video broadcasting and what that would mean and what is the technology behind it and how would that be done? Because it wasn't a public thing. It was a very private thing and you had to spend money to stream video over the internet. So it just feels incredible to be a part of something that did turn it into a service that was open to anyone, right? It equalized the playing field. If you had a great idea, if you were amazing at a game, if you wanted to run an esports tournament, you could. There was no more barrier to entry. And that to me is one of the most incredible things that has kind of happened over, you know, the last, 12 years in this industry. And, you know, 2009 was a very special year, not only for streaming, but also for esports, because we had, you know, streaming came along. We had Street Fighter 4 release. Yeah. We had StarCraft 2 release. League of Legends came out. So I will look back on 2009 always and say that was the year that I had essentially been building up to for much of my lifetime, to finally have it all explode, to have this trifecta of games, like really put people, talent, personalities, players, fans on the map. And really, you know, everything has just kind of exploded from there.
It's like the gaming community had a home.
Yeah, it, you're right. And that's what it was for me, too. I was like, this is it. This is like what I've been chasing for, you know, since 1999. This right here. It got a little bit of it in TSN, a little bit of it in ITG, a little bit of it in esports. But it really was, you know, Twitch where it was like, cool. Yeah, this is where I want to be.
This is prior. You had to just like beg Hollywood to let you put something on TV, which I've done so much of my life, to be just like, please believe in this. Like, please see the value in this. Please don't fuck it up on top of everything else. And you've gone through a lot of those trials and tribulations. And now we're at the point where people can create their own content and put it on Twitch and have their own delivery schedule. And obviously YouTube did that as well. But there's just something really cool about the just the live dynamic experience of being on there. I mean, it can be extremely stressful for me to like deal with a chat going off all at one time, but it's also encouraging because you get to see in real time that there's a gaming community that wants that content. And hats off to you for doing it, because I know you guys are continuing to try to tweak it and change it and make it work, because you had no idea how giant it would become.
Yeah, this is where I really have to give a large amount of shout outs to that early 2000 esports community, because you know, a lot of people say, yeah, it was Justin TV that sort of figured out the interactive thing. And it's like, I'm going to finger wag that. No, it wasn't. It was IRC and it was Shoutcast. It was this very duct taped together, weird combination Frankenstein hybrid of technologies that was almost an accident. And it was that sort of was like, oh, well, if we can do this, then we can go here and we can go here. But, you know, that it's still amazing to me that when I look at Twitch, sometimes I just see IRC Shoutcast, right? Because that's basically what it still is today. So to think that, you know, already back, you know, when it was growing, when esports was just trying to walk and whatnot, it was happening. That's where the fire started, and then it just turned into a roaring blaze.
I love that we're getting these living histories from people like you and people who were there during that time, because when I came into esports, I came in a really weird way, and I had a really conventional way, and I had no idea this giant backstory behind. I knew some of it, like the stuff that's in the news, but I didn't know the serious history behind it. And now I understand much better now in 2020 than I did in 2014 why people in esports are so damn protective about the scene. And it's because there's so much gatekeeping and so much that goes on. And it's not because people are, at first, you know, it comes off kind of prickly and it comes off like, we don't want you. But it's because they've had to work so hard to get recognition for all of the hard work that they've put into it, that nobody even recognizes or understands how much effort has gone into it that's been completely overlooked, not recognized, not valued, not paid. So to now understand it in 2020 and to get a better picture of it, I'm just hoping now, you know, as people come into the scene, that they're understanding this like vast history that goes behind it. I'm glad that, you know, we have you here to explain that. And we've got, you know, other people in the esports industry. I used to call them the esports Illuminati, but the people in the Illuminati that, you know, that really care about the future of it.
Yeah, but also people don't like change, Michelle.
They don't.
So it's
a
little bit of both, I would say. I would say it's a little bit of both.
It's true. I was trying to be super nice. But yeah.
That's true.
There's definitely a moment where my parents had a really hard time watching me win tournaments and win World Cups. And then Twitch happened and they just had to enter a link and watch my face win and watch me jump, you know, and feel the emotion while I'm at the event and not just have to connect through a Counter-Strike server with an IP. That was like a really groundbreaking moment for my family, just to be able to do that. And I'm sure for a lot of parents out there, when they can watch their children without having to travel across the world, it's making such a difference. Marcus, I have to talk about how humble you are. There's a reason why we don't know a lot about your stories, because you don't go around and brag about everything. You work hard. A lot of it is behind the scene. We need to talk about what else you're doing right now. It's time to not be humble. What are you working on? What can you be proud of right now?
Right now I'm like wrapping up the year, right? So that's pretty exciting. I would say that there's a couple of things that I got a chance to work on this year that I'm very, very excited about. So one of them is that, you know, in this new world of content creation, it is, as you mentioned, both, that it's right a new industry. There's new careers. People are figuring out how to run a business and how to be a broadcaster and what goes into all of this. And I think unique challenges come with that as well, right? As someone who has now sort of lived through the many eras and have established my career, you know, I often look at the creators of today and say, what sort of things can I do to help them through some of these, you know, these challenges? How can I help them identify some of the challenges so that maybe, you know, we can squish some of the problems that people have before they even happen? So this year was special for me because I think being a content creator is a really unique job, right? Like it can be a desk job in a lot of ways. In some cases, you're spending 8 hours in front of a camera and in front of an audience. And then you get off and maybe you spend another 2-3 hours like working on what you're going to stream next, or you've got new emotes to make or new graphics. And I think that you know, again, with interesting challenges come interesting solutions. And I care deeply for the sort of mental health and of our, you know, of our creators. And so over the past year, there's been, you know, a lot of great mental health resources that have come out, new guides, resources, you know, available to everyone. But one thing that I thought would be really phenomenal would be a way to help coach creators through some of these.
I love that.
And that is a, it's a tall order, and that's why we got a chance to partner up with Healthy Gamer this year, who has been doing exactly that in like the esports and the creator space for now several years. And so this year was very special to me, especially given the fact that a lot of people are under quarantine for a pandemic and dealing with a lot of life things that also added to the craziness of the year. And we were able to offer for the first time some coaching totally free to creators just to help them, right? It's not therapy. It's not anything like – it's coaching, right? It is it is the ability to sit down and talk with someone who can be relatable to the industry that you work in, right? As someone who's gone through some coaching and therapy myself, the worst part is when – you know, you're sitting down and they're like, so tell me what are, you know, and like, yeah, so I'm in esports. And like,
what's that?
What's that?
Yeah.
Right. What's content creation? What's Twitch? Right. And I know that there's many others in the same position. So this year we got to launch kind of the pilot of that program. I hope to be expanding it next year, but this is something that I think, you know, whether at Twitch or whatever, I will always care about and try to see if we can open up new doors and avenues for people just to make sure that they're aware of staying healthy, both physically, but also mentally, right? It's really important. The other thing I'm very proud of this year is I've worked very closely with Anna Prosser and, and Britt Wiseman. And over the course of several years at Twitch, we developed something called a hosting and interviewing workshop. Because, you know, what we discovered working at Twitch was that, you know, we've got all this amazing talent and they are so comfortable being in front of a camera with their own audience for hours a day. But sometimes those skills don't actually translate to being a host or interviewing on a stage. And so we said, wouldn't it be great if we could, you know, put out a call for anyone who would be interested in picking up those skills, who would be interested in learning more about the philosophies behind being a host and what it takes to, you know, for with the production aspect and having someone in your ear and working with production and like talking with the guests and doing a group interview, like all these things that you probably don't get exposure to just sitting in front of your computer and being a streamer. And so we've been doing this since 2017. It's something, you know, I'm very proud of. Meg Kaylee, who does all the GameStop stuff, she went through our workshop. Okadrian, who does a lot of the work for Twitch, went through our workshop. Deadflip, who is a pinball streamer and who's streamed everything from the Big Buck Hunter World Championship to you know, pinball competitions. Like, we've got all of these sort of individuals that we were able to sort of take under our wing and pass some of these skill sets along to. Well, given everything that happened this year, one of the major things was obviously Black Lives Matters. And to me, it was really great to be able to take that moment and say, you know, what can I do to contribute? You know, like, I want to amplify these voices. I want to make sure that these are issues that are being heard. But, you know, what is the extra five steps that I can take? And so what I did is I revived the hosting and interviewing workshop, and I brought Anna and I brought Britt back, and I said, we're going to do workshops for Black creators. You know, we're like, we're going to, because we need more diversity on Twitch. We need more diversity in esports. We need more diversity, period. And this is our way of giving skills and giving, you know, hopefully open doors for opportunities and careers by doing the exact same thing that we've been doing for several years. And so we just did our second one, actually, it was the 9th of December. We got a chance to work with 43 Black creators over the course of 2 months. And, you know, I'm already so excited because they're just an incredibly talented group of individuals who already show so much great potential. I've had conversations with folks in esports and folks at Twitch and in other places about like, hey, here is some great talent that you should consider. And so, you know, to me, that was just, it was great to take something that we built years ago and that we saw have some really great success. But this year was about giving back for me, right? I mentioned it earlier, but I'm at that point in career where I think that my success is when other people are successful. And that's what I want to do. So those were two of my big focuses this year and two things that I'm very proud to have kind of kickstarted and been a part of at Twitch.
Oh, so awesome.
You're a good guy, DJ Wheat.
Thanks.
DJ Wheat, Marcus, it was so great to have you on the Game
Thanks
Diaries.
For having me.
Thank you so much. I mean, just from a personal note, too, I don't think you and I have spent much time together, and you've been in my orbit for so long through like Anna and Rachel. And I just want to thank you so much for coming on and sharing your story, Game Diaries Postscript. Thank you, everyone, so much for listening. And please remember to hit the subscribe button wherever you listen to podcasts. And even if you're watching on YouTube, leave a comment. We'd love reading them and hearing everything you guys have to say.
And I want to add, because during the original episode, we forgot to mention how wonderful your website is. If you want to learn more about DJ Wheat, go to djwheat.com, because Jeff.Kim wrote
amazing
amazing piece, pretty much a lot, if not all the information that we could find on you was from is doing and spending hours and hours with you writing your life story. So you have to check out his work. I repeat, djwheat.com at Jeff D-O-T Kim. I want to make sure that we reiterate how much work he did for your auto.
He's great.
Or for your biography. Remember as well, if you have a story of your own that you want to share with us and share with the world, please let us know. We love reading your diary entries. Go to thegamediaries.com and let us know what is it that changed your life with gaming, or how did gaming change your life? It doesn't have to be that life-changing too. It could be a really cool story that happened for you in gaming, and we will read it in one of our episodes. Yay. Marcus, thank you so much once again.
Thank you.
Have a great holiday. We'll see you in 2021,
everyone. Happy New Year. Goodbye.